My name is Mickey, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 10th, 1963. My home group is the Sisters in Sobriety group in Springville, Utah. And I want to ask if you'd join me in a moment of silent gratitude for the AA members who have recovered in the last 75 years. I want to introduce our first speaker of the day. I have not met these people before this morning. They came up and introduced themselves to me, and I was so grateful that they all showed up. And our first speaker this morning is Don B., and I'm looking forward to hearing him, as I'm sure you are.
Wow. Good morning, everyone. My name is Don Billings, and I'm an alcoholic. I told my friend Chris that I thought I had conquered my fears in Alcoholics Anonymous. Until yesterday, I walked in and saw the size of this room, and this morning I see the size of this crowd. And by the way, I did take a picture of the crowd. I hope I have your permission to do that. Just because I want to show my friends that there are gatherings of people in Alcoholics Anonymous of this size, and somehow God arranged it for me to be here to tell you a little bit about my story. The theme that I'm supposed to speak about is Let It Begin With Me. Well, that sounds good because I always wanted everything to begin with me. You know, and I don't know, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in Alcoholics Anonymous today and that I don't particularly approve of, for whatever that means, you know. It's just that I hate to see things diluted. And so now I find it necessary to open my big mouth sometimes and say things that other people don't like. But a little bit about me, okay? I'm one of those people. I took my first drink and somewhere in the age of 14, and I don't remember the date exactly or the circumstances exactly, except that myself and a neighbor, a friend of mine, you know, we acquired a six-pack of beer, and we drank that over one Saturday when our parents were away, and I remembered that as the most fun that I'd ever had in my life. Nothing drastic happened. You know, how drunk can you get on a six-pack? You know, and we even shared some with the dog, you know. The dog got a little stupid, but but the significant thing that I've learned about that is that I remember that vividly today. Non-alcoholics don't remember things that vividly about their first drink. They probably can't tell you when it was. And the other significant thing is that from that day forward, I never, ever turned down the opportunity to have a drink. And for a while, it was a slow process. I grew up in a home where alcohol wasn't consumed or tolerated, and not too many people in the neighborhood drank, that I noticed anyway. But I loved the effect. I don't know about you, but alcohol affects me differently from other people who drink alcohol. When I take a drink of alcohol, everything is instantly okay, at the minimum, you know. I don't get mildly elevated in mood, you know, and a little less shy. I go straight to cloud nine with that very first drink. And I want to maintain that. So I follow that first drink up with the second drink as soon as possible. And that's the way it was for me. And that's the way it was for a long time in the early days. I got really high, had some wonderful times, A lot of rock and roll and women and dancing and, you know, parties and all that stuff. It was wonderful. But that soon began to deteriorate. So, ever so often, some not so wonderful things would happen. And by the time I was in my mid-20s, it got to the point where you could flip a coin to decide whether it was going to be wonderful or disastrous. You know, and it got very unpredictable. You see, I learned one of the things that I can, one of the definitions of an alcoholic is, for me, is if you can't predict what's going to happen after you take a drink, you're probably an alcoholic. Now, whether that means that you're going to close up the bar or you're going to go straight to the dope house, makes no difference to me. If you can't predict what's going to happen, alcohol is your problem. And that's the way it was for me. And I'm not going to tell you a big long story about the, you know, about how to get drunk. You all know how to do that. I ran my string as long as I could. I joined the military and bounced around the world and had quite a few adventures. I went to England, got married over there, found a wife. And I was always a rebellious one. In those days, in the late 50s and early 60s, a good way to show you're rebellious, if you're young, if you're a white fellow like me, is to date colored women, black women in particular. So I did that. And I thought I was, you know, advancing civil rights and all that stuff, you know. and to show that I was really earnest, you know, I actually married a Jamaican woman. I took her hostage, brought her back to the United States where she had no friends. You know, she had no friends or family anywhere close, and a drunk for a husband. And I put her through hell. Because I was never faithful. I was never very supportive financially. I was in the military, didn't make much money, and what money we did make, you know, I spent on booze. And I got lots of trouble. But I also was very good at what I did in the military, which was a pharmacy. I was a pharmacy technician. You know, God works in wonderful ways, I tell you. And I was very good at what I did. And my commanding officers would preface all of our interviews with, Don, you are one of the smartest pharmacy technicians I've ever run across. You know, you're really good at what you do, and you're an invaluable part of this organization, yada, 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 but, you know, that night when you peed on the jukebox the other, you know, last week at the club, you know, I don't know if that was really the truth, you know, or not, but whether he was pulling my leg. You know, people can do that to us. But at any rate, I ran it out as far as I could, and, you know, and I was beginning to have dreams of my stripes flying away from me, you know, and I did well in the service. I ended up having 6 stripes on my arm in a position of great responsibility and so on, but I was a drunk. And every night at the bar, immediately after work, I'd end up closing the joint. After I said I wasn't going to drink today. And one night my daughter, I got home early, I guess, before her bedtime. And she looked at me at the door and asked me why I always had to go to that club. Why couldn't I just come home sometimes? And I didn't have an answer. And yeah, it took me a moment, but I told her the only answer I had. I don't know, baby. I just have to. And that, within a few weeks of that, is the day I took my last drink, December 13th, 1977. And I just could not put up with living the way I was living one more day. Now, I didn't know that at the time. You had to teach me that. You had to show me, through looking back at my life, that I hadn't had fun drinking in at least 5 years. You know? And I just couldn't put up with it anymore. So when I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found it through the treatment center, and there was a guy there that was being kicked out of the Air Force for chronic alcoholism, and he took me to an AA meeting. And I did not understand what you were talking about, but there was something there. And a guy asked me to come back. And when I came back, he remembered my name and he welcomed me. He brought me a cup of coffee. And that guy's still around today and I love him dearly. But I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I got a sponsor and a big book and a home group and a lot of the things I did for all the wrong reasons. I got a sponsor because that's somebody I wasn't scared of. All the old timers at that time, you know, I listened to them, but they scared me to death because they talk mean to you, you know. Yeah. They tell you to shut the blank up, you know, when I'm running off with all of my knowledge. And the sponsor I did, one of the best things he did for me was he would take me, after a meeting when I had shared a little bit, he would take me out in the parking lot and put his finger in my face, and I wanted to bite that thing off, and tell me I was the most dishonest son of a bitch he ever met. A few months later, I got promoted. He got new sponsee, and I became the second most dishonest so-and-so. But I do want to say that my sponsor did the best. I believe he did the best he could. But he held me back on doing the recovery steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are steps 4 through 9. And I almost went insane. I almost went to prison. And I created a lot of harm around me because I was absolutely Looney Tunes. I don't do that with people I sponsor. My friend Chris and I, we do a beginner's meeting every week. And we follow that format that Wally P. helped us with. Well, we sort of follow it. You know, we take people through all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in 4 one-hour sessions. And we allow them to get their feet wet and to do the steps. We don't talk about working the steps. That's another thing I speak up about a lot. Nowhere in the big book that I can find does it ever use the term working the steps. It talks a lot about taking them. It talks about living the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I try to do, and that's what I try to convey today. And I didn't find this format until about 5 years ago, and that's when I decided that even though I couldn't get a lot of support from AAs around me who were doing the things that they've been told to do over the years and not following the big book very closely, I decided let it begin with me. So we stick with our meeting regardless of whether anybody shows up or not. And we allow people the opportunity to learn all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as quickly as possible. You see, I found out in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, the goal of a sponsor was to get the newcomer to the 12th step as soon as possible so that they could have the necessary spiritual awakening or experience that would enable them to continue to work the steps or do the steps on a daily basis. And that's what I do today. You know, I can't tell you that all the wonderful things happened to me and sobriety that have happened to many speakers that I hear. My family did not get back together. It split up. That wife that I abused so badly took her own life and left a note to let the world know that it was all my fault, which a lot of it was. That was true. But I had made amends to her. I'd done the best I could to be a good husband and good father. And that didn't work out. And I had to do what I have to do today. I have to come stick with you here in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where life begins for me. And that's where I get the greatest blessing that sobriety can get. And that's the ability to pass on my experience to you and see it work for you like it worked for me. Because I came here a hopeless, pitiful, pissy drunk. I want to be cool like everybody else sometimes, you know. And I remember trying to be cool standing at the bar and peeing. The pee just pooling at my feet. I came to that to speaking before you today. 32 years and some months of sobriety, and it may not impress you, but it does impress me, I'll tell you. What an honor. I hope everybody here has got a little something from what I've had to say. I'm so delighted to be here at another convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend, and I hope it affects me the same way it has affected me at the other convention. I hope this is true for you. I'm probably going to leave here this weekend on one of the best highs that I ever had in my life, and it's going to last a lot longer. You know, the last convention I went to, you couldn't upset me for a month. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
Thank you, Don. And I am very pleased to introduce our next speaker, Cecilia. We were talking before the meeting, and she's wearing this beautiful suit. And we shared that we both learned early on in sobriety that they told us, if you're going to say that you're sober, you better look like you're sober. And today she looks pretty sober to me.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Cecilia. My sobriety date is November 28th, 1990. My home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Titusville, Florida. And if you'd like to come have your pictures taken with Phil and Bob, please stop by the Florida Hospitality Suite, because they're there for you. I'd like to tell you why I'm here. This is page 180 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the most wonderful blessing to be relieved of a terrible curse of which I was afflicted. My health is good, and I've regained my self-respect and the respect of my colleagues. My home life is ideal, and my business is as good as can be expected in these uncertain times. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learn to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. That's the example from Dr. Bob on service, and it's been my guidepost for almost the entire time I've been sober, and it has served me well. When I heard the topic, Let It Begin With Me, the first thing I thought was archives. I am a past area officer for District Area 14, which is North Florida. I am the past archivist for North Florida, and I currently serve as the alternate delegate for North Florida, and I love AA's history because someone took the time to pass on the traditions to me and to pass on the concepts and how we got them and to pass on what one alcoholic talking to another did for us. And if it weren't for that, we wouldn't be here. And so when I think of Let It Begin With Me, I think of is how do I pass on that love of history, that example of one alcoholic talking to another, and of carrying the message of our history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my home group actually helped me with this. At one time, my home group was the new birth group at the Tomoka State Prison, which is in DeLion, Florida. It's a maximum security men's prison. I was asked to come in and speak to that prison by J.R.B., who was the corrections chair for the area at the time when I was area chair. And I walked in, and the first thing I said was, "I'm here to stay sober, and if you're not here for the same reason, we're in the wrong place." And that was the tone of that meeting, and that was my home group for the next 9 years. Because they went to any length to stay sober. They write articles for Box 459. They write articles for the Grapevine. They have a spiritual leader, a outside GSR, inside GSR. They 12-step a wet drunk every day. They went to any length to stay sober, and that was a great example for me of service. And so I made them my home group, and I went in every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. If you go in 3 times in a row with a clean uniform, you use no profanity, and your shoes are tied and you have a belt on, you get a badge. And then you get a pin for multiple years of sobriety. And after 6 weeks, you get to go to the step meeting. And what I loved about the step meeting is that they talked about the history and how we got our steps. But they only had 55 minutes for a meeting. And when I would say at the beginning of every June, you know, it's another anniversary. We need to talk about how we got here and then talk about our history. They go, "We'd like to, but, you know, we only have this much time for a meeting and we only get it once a week. And we want to use every minute of that meeting for recovery." So they said, "You can talk about the history of AA. You get 5 minutes." No more. 5 minutes. So they challenged me to come up with the history of Alcoholics Anonymous in 5 minutes. And so we did. And we made up a book in the North Florida area, which has a history of early AA, and then it has some examples. It has obituaries of the co-founders and of Lois, and it talks about Silky and Dr. Shoemaker. And then what the back of the book is the history of North Florida. And we have a list of the very first conference in 1951, that was invited to. Tom Sharp and Bill Wilson set up our area back in 1950 and 51. And then it talks about the history of the districts, and we have district maps. And at the very last page of the book, it says, "Start your own archives." And that's what the groups did. And they put their group minutes in there, and they put their group resolutions, and they put their group flyers. And they let it begin with them showing how their group was formed and the history of their group. We have a great tradition in the North Florida area. It's called a group history form. We're now known as the history area because we've challenged every group to fill out one and to send it to New York. Where did you come from? How did one drunk talking to another start your group? How did you carry that message from one alcoholic to another? What we also did is we talked about, how do you instill that passion? How do I get you to want to go to an archives meeting? Or to talk about the traditions. And one of the things we do is we take the traditions and we put them in the I. I need to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. For my group purpose, I use a loving God. I need to have unity with me. If I won't have unity with me, I'm not going to have unity with you. And so we take the traditions and we put them in the I and we talk about, how do you live them? And it's a struggle. My service sponsor, who's sitting in about the fourth row staring at me, said, "You will take those traditions and you will write them in the eye and you will learn them." And she also took me through the service manual. Let it begin with me means my sponsees go through the service manual, just like we do the big book in the 12 and 12. Because the first chapter is our history. It tells us how we got here. And it's so much more than just as simple as one drunk talking to another, because you got to get that other drunk to want to stay. How do you get them to stay? You share with them the joy of recovery. Yeah, there's some not joy to recovery. I got this morning when I put on pantyhose, there was no joy in recovery. But it's part of the process, you know. And we talk about that love that we have for one another. Because I learned how to receive unconditional love in AA, which then taught me how to give it. That doesn't mean I necessarily have to like you, room with you, or invite you over for coffee. But I unconditionally love the people that I meet in AA. because that's what I was taught to do. Acceptance. You know, we all have character defects. And as one of my great friends says, as long as I'm single, I will always not have any because I'm practically perfect when I'm by myself. It's when I bring in all those other elements that all that tends to come out and play. And so I have to remember that we have character defects. We have differences. But the love of this program means I need to pass it on. And pass it on means I do the history of the traditions. I do the history of the concepts. We started the history of the steps at my home group on the 1st of April last year. And it was going to last 13 weeks because every week we're going to talk about the history of how we got that step. Because all the steps do have history to them. We're 5 pages away from finishing the 12th step. Because we're taking it paragraph, line by line. And we're learning of the love that's in the steps. You know, it's so much more than 12 on a wall. And that's part of our history, how we got them. When I think about Let It Begin With Me, I think about the example that was set for me by the women in Alcoholics Anonymous and the men as well. But mostly the women. The first time I went to an area assembly, I sat next to a woman with 30 years. I had never been next to someone that had that much time. And she said, "What do you know about the traditions?" And I went, "They start with a T. They're on the wall." And she said, "Go get your service manual. We're going to talk traditions." And she spent 15 minutes with me talking about traditions. And I went, okay, I need to learn more. Who do I go find? So then I started seeking out those women that knew the traditions. And I started going to traditions meetings. And that's usually the meeting that when you leave, there's only 10 people in the room. Because, oh my God, it's a traditions meeting. So I also thought, one of the things I have to do is I got to make it fun. You got to want to be there. And so we have fun traditions meetings. St. Francis comes. John D. Rockefeller shows up. A little late sometimes, but he's there. Yeah. And we talk about those characters that brought to life our history. And then we think about Anne and we think about Lois and their contributions to our history, because they also gave us some great examples of Let It Begin With Me. Talk about unconditional love, live with a drunk, and then stay with them when they get sober. And watch that metamorphosis that happens when we become the people that we were meant to be. My first drunk was a blackout. My last drunk was a blackout. Lasted a lot longer because I learned how to black out better. But that was my history. You know, I just drank to kill the pain, and it worked. Which means I need to live my recovery to spread the joy and to spread the experience that no, there isn't anything that my higher power, my sponsor, and I can't get through, regardless of what it is. When I think about our history, I think about the fact that there are so many examples of how we didn't do it right, that I never have to worry about, am I doing it wrong? I just have to look to the history to see who did it that way before. And what happened? What was the example of what went wrong? It's not just the Washingtonians and the Emmanuel movement and the Oxford groups. It's so much more of examples of breaking traditions, examples of knowing that when I don't suit up and show up, when I use inappropriate language, when I talk about things that aren't part of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm not carrying a message, I'm carrying an opinion. And I got them. Oh, yes, do I have them. I'm a good Irish Catholic. I got lots of opinions. But I also know that our history has shown that opinions are like, and everybody has one. That doesn't mean we all need to hear it. And I was taught that showing the example is better than talking the example. So by being of service, both to my area, my group, and my sponsees, by being a sponsor and having a sponsor, by knowing that I may not have 15 minutes to share with traditions, but I have a service manual and I'll make 15 minutes. That's the problem sometimes in sobriety. It's finding the time to spend the time. Because life is life. Work 2 jobs, take care of my mother, I have a husband, a cat, live on a sailboat, and run my own business. And that's just the week. You know, it doesn't count the rest of the month. It's hard to find that time. But, and there are no buts, I understand. The co-founders and the early pioneers of AA showed us that 15 minutes, because that's all Dr. Bob was going to give him. I'm only giving that guy 15 minutes and we're out of here. 5 hours later, he's still talking to Bill Wilson. He's still carrying that message. And he said the one thing that makes us different than any other organization in the United States, Europe, or Canada. He talked my language. The language of service, unity, and recovery. It says so on our medallions. And that's the difference between us and other groups. Let it begin with me means I need to be a part of all three of those things. Recovery means I need to suit up and show up. Unity means that if it says I'm supposed to do this and this is the format, I stick to that format. I don't decide, oh, I'd rather do something else. The unity of the group conscience, is our voice. And that, per the traditions, tells us we must stick to. And of service. To be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it because it gave me the opportunity to get my life back. It didn't give me my life back. It gave me the opportunity to find a life, because I didn't have that when I was drinking. It gave me the opportunity to know that if I don't pass it on, it won't be here for the man or the woman who is behind me. Not the only person by any means, but again, you got to get that spark. You got to get that stuff going. Whereas people want to sit down and talk about archives. I brought some archives books with me if you want one. They're at the North Florida Hospitality Suite. Because to me, there's nothing neater than sitting down and talking about traditions. The love of the history. Why we're here. I can't imagine being any other place. I walk in and there's a lady I haven't seen in, I'd say 8 years. And she looked at me and says, I think I know you, but I don't recognize you. And I go, same thing, but your hair is the same color, you know. And we're sitting there going, I know you. You know, and it's, where else can we go and do this? Every 5 years. 10 years ago, I was shaking hands in Minneapolis at the Florida Hospitality Suite saying, welcome. And I got the opportunity to do that again this year. And that, to me, is also the continuation of AA. 75 years, wow. Guy sat next to me yesterday and he had a 52-year medallion. And I said, what was it like when you first got here? And he says, I don't know, I was a drunk. I don't remember a lot about what it was like when I first got here. And he says, but I can tell you what keeps me here. And he talked about traditions and he talked about history and he talked about carrying the message. And to me, that's what we're here for. And I encourage all of you, let that spark, let that desire, let that passion, share it with someone else and make them just want to grab a hold of our history. The archives display in the main hall is incredible. Michelle is here from GSO Archives, and she will sit down and tell you about our history as well. She brought some great things from the GSO Archives. I mean, where can you go in New York City and walk in the front door and they say, welcome home? Yeah, and it is. We own this fellowship. But as owning it, we have a responsibility. And that responsibility is to carry the message and to pass it on. And I hope each one of you lets it begin with you.
Thank you, Cecilia. Oh, I'll tell you, I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know, about what it means to me to let it begin with me. And I was thinking about my first meeting. I did not go to my first meeting willingly. I was taken there by somebody who I was afraid of, and so I went. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I thought I was a lot of things, but I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. And thank God this person knew that I was an alcoholic and knew what I needed and took me to that meeting. And I was thinking about what happened for me at that meeting. I don't remember one thing that was shared in that meeting. I do know they gave me a cup of coffee, and I was afraid not to drink it, even though I wasn't a coffee drinker. And they kept refilling it. And the only other thing I remember about that meeting is a lady who came up to me after that meeting. And I call her a lady because she is a lady. She is my good friend to this day. Her name is Pat J. And Pat came up to me after that meeting, and she put her arm around my shoulder, and she said, "Have you got a problem, honey?" And I said, "No, I don't have a problem. He's got a problem." And pointed at the guy that brought me there. And she said, "That's all right, honey. Just keep coming back." And when I think about "let it begin with me," that's what I think about. I think about walking up to that woman who's in that meeting for the first time, shaken and scared and stinking. See, it was really funny that I said I didn't have a problem to everybody around me, because I couldn't remember the last time that I had a bath or washed my hair or brushed my teeth. And I had wine sores all over my arms and my legs, and I weighed 85 pounds because I was living on Skid Row. And I didn't have an opportunity to bathe, but I always had an opportunity to drink. I might not have something to eat every day, but I always found something to drink. And it's my responsibility today to walk up to that new woman who's shaken and scared and doesn't know whether or not she belongs there, and to put my arm around her and say, "Honey, have you got a problem? And what can I do for you?" You know, that's, for me, that's what it means to let it begin with me. Let it begin with me is remembering where I came from, remembering what it's like to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous and scared. You know, I couldn't ask questions when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was afraid to ask anybody a question. And I don't know how I did it, but somehow every meeting I went to for the first couple of weeks that I was sober, I would say, "Where's there another meeting?" And somebody would tell me where the next meeting was, and I would get there somehow. And I didn't drink. And I didn't know why I wasn't drinking, but I didn't drink from my first meeting. I haven't had to have a drink since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I think that today what I got was a grace period. I think my higher power just graced me with the gift of sobriety, because I wasn't capable of doing anything. You know, they say work the steps in order to get sober. If we have to work the steps first, none of us will ever get sober. You get sober and then you work the steps to find out how to live sober. You know, I couldn't get sober, and when I got sober, I didn't know how to live. And let it begin with me means sharing with that new person how to live sober. You know, how to do the simple little things. And, you know, I just am so grateful. It took me about 2 weeks to figure out there was a meeting list, and I didn't have to ask anybody where the meetings were. I remember going to a meeting in my first week of sobriety, and it was at a place called a men's 12-step house. And I counted the steps going into the house, and there weren't 12 steps. And I thought these people were crazy because they called it a 12-step house and it didn't have 12 steps. I didn't know yet that the program had 12 steps. I had never heard of a 12-step program. I had never heard about this program, you know. And so I have to remember the people coming through the door. They don't know. They don't understand the things that we're talking about. I have to remember that, because sometimes we talk and we assume the people that are there know what we're saying or understand what we're saying. And let it begin with me is, hey, remembering that sometimes we don't know. And we're scared to ask. And I am so grateful to have this opportunity to chair this meeting today, and to be able to remember where I came from and remember that it's my responsibility to pass it on. You know, that's what Let It Begin With Me is about. It's about passing it on to the next person. You know, if I'm not happy with the way my meeting is going, I need to let it begin with me, for me to do what I think needs to be done, not to expect somebody else to do it. You know, if I don't like it that there aren't greeters at the door, maybe I better go greet at the door. You know, if I don't like it that those newcomers are coming in and nobody's talking to them, maybe I better go talk to them. You know, that's what it means to let it begin with me. And I am so grateful today to know that no matter how long I'm sober, no matter what experiences I have, I am so grateful for this experience that no matter what experiences I have in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my life, nothing is more important than reaching out to that drunk who is walking through the door as sick and as scared as I was. Or maybe not as sick and scared as I was. You know, a lot of us people come to us today after going through some kind of a treatment program or after going into an institution. And they may not be sick and drunk, but that doesn't mean they aren't scared. And that doesn't mean that they don't need somebody to reach out to them. And even if they think they know it all because they've had 28 days of training, they still need to learn the AA way and the language of the heart. And I am so grateful to know today that it's my responsibility to share that. And I'm going to shut up because I'm not supposed to be a speaker, but I had to say something. And I'm going to introduce the real speaker, my new friend Mark that I met this morning. And I knew he was a speaker when he walked up to me because he looks like a speaker. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. My home group's the Serenity Group, meets in Kalispell, Montana, and invite everyone, well, not all of you at once, but I'd love to see you all there someday and hope you get up there. My sobriety date's February 26, 1980, and the reason it's a February sobriety date is I decided I was going to quit drinking in August. So. But I got to AA because I just had enough. I was literally, as we say, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I just couldn't stand the way I was living anymore. And just three or four years before then, I had two cars, a pickup, two motorcycles, some other toys, a good-paying job. And by the time I got here, all that was gone, except for two cars that neither of them had run, but I had two cars. And I thought it wasn't that bad. But I got here just in time, I guess, or I got here at the right time, I should say. And I stayed sober 17 days and went out again for a couple days. And during those 17 days, I was happily working my program. The same one that got me here in the first place, except I didn't drink, and it didn't work. And what worked for me was accepting the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and incorporating that into my life, following some directions. And that's pretty good for somebody who doesn't like to be told what to do. Maybe some of you are a little bit that way every now and then. But I, like the first speaker, Don, I had my first drink when I was about 14. And I knew right then I wanted more. And I was involved in high school athletics. I was on the football team and on the ski team. So I knew that if you got caught drinking, you'd get kicked off the team. And I never got caught. But after that was done, I had the freedom to drink more often. And somewhere along the line, probably when I was about 15 or so, during the summer, alcohol was doing for me what I loved. It took away the shyness. I was able to talk. And apparently I was a little mouthy because somebody pulled a gun on me and told me to sit down and shut up. I was willing to take direction then. It seemed like a good idea. And so things started to happen to me early on. But drinking still took away that shyness. And by the time I got to AA, I was no longer able to hold a job. I was unemployed and unemployable. The good things had gone away, and I didn't know what else to do. And the way I got to AA, I was sitting at the bar with some friends of mine. We'd been out ice fishing that morning, and I told one of my friends, says, "Man, I just can't go on living the way I'm living." He said, "Yeah, I know what you mean. And there's something you can do about it." I said, really? What? He said, well, I can't tell you here. So we got a case of beer and went over to his house and called AA. That was my first introduction to AA. And my last drink, like I said, was about 17 days later. I'd gone on a little two-day drunk, and I was sitting at the bar on a late Saturday afternoon. I was the only one in the bar, and I said, God, I'm back on the wrong track again. And so I went to the payphone at the bar, and I called AA, and I said, I want to talk to someone in AA. I said, well, the way we do it is we have somebody call you back. What's your number? So I gave him the number of the payphone, went back to the bar. A little while later, the bartender answered the phone, said, anybody here call AA? Well, I was the only one in the bar. And I said no and laughed. But I left that drink sitting on the bar, and that's the only one I ever remember not finishing, and that was my last drink. So that's how I got back to AA. And I became willing to follow direction, just as willing as I was when that guy pulled a gun on me. And because it was just as important, because my life was at stake again, just as it was then. And I want to tell you a story, something that happened to me this morning. I was walking over here, and I went down to the river walk, and a guy stopped me for a minute because there was a bird there, and he said, that's the father. He's trying to fish for a crawfish to feed the babies that are up over there in the bushes. And we started talking, and he walked with me for a while, and mostly he talked. And he told me that he couldn't come to our meetings here because he was a crackhead. And he said he wasn't doing crack because of the job he had. The drug tested him and regularly, and he needed to keep that job. And he had quite a story, though. But before I could tell him about Narcotics Anonymous, he teared up after he told me about the death of his parents, and he walked away. So if you see a guy about 5'7", hasn't had a shave in a week or so, kind of grayish beard, name's Jerry, tell him about Narcotics Anonymous for me, will you? I didn't get a chance to. Those are our people. They're everywhere. And we run into them in the darndest places. Today I'm a judge. I see people in my courtroom every day who are alcoholic and drug addicted, and I refer them to Alcoholics Anonymous in the best way I know how. And I see these people in AA meetings. And what I want to tell you is, no matter where you are, if you follow your dream, you just might get it. And that's what happened with me. From that first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was unemployed and unemployable, and I was fortunate to go back to school. I got married after I met someone in Oklahoma City, and we were married about 24 and a half years. I lost her to cancer about 2.5 years ago. But she asked me, if I could do anything I wanted to do, what would I do? And I said, well, I'd go back to school. And she said, then why don't you? I said, well, I don't know where the schools are here or anything. She said, I'll take you tomorrow. And she did, and I went. And then after that bachelor's degree, I went on to law school. And I'm really grateful to that woman. We had a great 25 years together. And at any rate, I got through her passing without drinking. And I want to tell you that our program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a program that works in rough going. I've lost a lot of people close to me, both my parents, my two best friends I grew up with as well, and I didn't drink. And I hope that's an example to someone that no matter how bad it seems, no matter what you're going through, you don't have to drink. You can stay sober. Stay close to Alcoholics Anonymous. Talk to your sponsor. And you can get through anything. Nothing is so bad that me for me so far that I've had to drink. And nothing's been so good that I had to drink either. I've had some good things happen to me too. And today, I really want to tell you I enjoyed the first two speakers very much, and I wanted to thank them for their sharing. And they both talked about something that's important, and letting it begin with me, and for each of you to let it begin with you. We've got to be there for that new man or woman when they come through the door for the first time. We've got to be there. We can't be alcoholics who have arrived and no longer need those meetings. Lord knows we've all run into those. And not one of them has what I want, anyway. And I think the newcomer can sense that, too. Well, first of all, they aren't going to see him in the meeting because they don't need those meetings anymore. But someone was there for me at my first meeting. And when I got to my first meeting, I thought I was going insane and that I really needed to go to the state mental hospital. And I was at AA by accident. And I talked to somebody before the meeting, and he said, well, you might be right, but why don't you check us out first? And I did, and I've been here ever since, except for those 2 days when I was still experimenting with my old way of life. And even after that, I still struggled a bit in that I would still go to the bars and hang out with my old friends and shoot pool and play cards and drink Cokes. And my sponsor helped me get through that to where I no longer was doing that. I can't tell you how important a sponsor is if you're new or nearly new, or even if you've been around here for a while without a sponsor. You really ought to check it out. It really made a difference for me. The worst period of my sobriety, I went for about a year and a half where I had a sponsor who agreed with everything I said. Whatever I wanted to do was just fine. And couldn't have been worse for me. And that sponsor was me. I learned I can't sponsor myself. And if any of you are thinking about that experiment, well, I wish you the best, but didn't go well for me. I didn't drink, but it was not a happy time. So I hope you don't have to do it that way, and you don't have to. But if you're thinking about it, please rethink it. And God, I love Alcoholics Anonymous today. I'm so glad to be here. This is my 5th international convention, and I love them. I love meeting people, and like I told you, I was painfully shy before I discovered alcohol. I think I've lost a little bit of that. And I lost it here because you guys make me stand up in front of groups of people and talk, even when I don't want to. And I do it anyway because I know I need to stay sober and I need you. And that's important for me to be part of this, that I'm willing to do whatever I'm asked. I've been active in AA service throughout most of my sobriety. I was active in meetings in jails and prisons. And I want to tell you, there are a lot of alcoholics there. And it's important that we go there and carry the message. Because those people in those places, and as well as treatment centers, they're going to get the message, Alcoholics Anonymous, from somebody, if not us. But it's important that they get the message from somebody who knows what they're talking about. And that's us. I mean, the guy who first carried the message to me was the drunk sitting on the bar stool next to me. I'm telling you, the program's that powerful that you don't even have to be sober to carry the message. But he didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to get here to learn. And so that's what we've got to do, is help people get here so they can learn about Alcoholics Anonymous. So we need to be in those places carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm no longer effective at it because of my job. I did it for probably the first 2 years or so after I passed the bar and became a practicing lawyer. But those guys learned what I did for a living somehow. And I was no longer effective because the meetings became about my case instead of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I had to stop doing that, and I hated that because I really enjoyed carrying the message there. And I can tell you, it's a great sound when you hear that door clang behind you when you're leaving. When you ask the jailer and say, gee, we'd like to leave now, and they let you. That still impresses me. Because there were times when it didn't go that smoothly. And many of us have had our ups and downs and have wound up in places like that and not known what to do. And it's important that we be there. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody there is going to get the message because we carried it better than anybody else. It doesn't matter. Just carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor told me that if you're looking for instant gratitude, or instant gratification, rather, by carrying the message into those places, you aren't going to get it. Because often, if those guys get sober, it'll be years down the road in another state, and you won't know anything about it. But our job is to carry the message, and not to make them get it. They'll get it when they get it. Because not one of us could get here before we had our last drink, right? Well, neither can they. And just hope that we can tell them where they can decide their last drink was their last drink and make it so. And that's if they hook up with our great fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is a truly great fellowship. We're worldwide. It's unbelievable. The people here from all the different countries all over the world, as well as the USA, Canada. And it's great reconnecting with old friends. I'm enjoying that and making new friends. And I'd love a chance to talk with any of you who would like to talk with me later. And remember my new friend Jerry out there. If you see him, tell him there's help for him too. Thank you very much.
I knew that I would do it wrong. I have never yet led a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and exactly followed the format. I try, I really do try, and I always miss something. And I want to thank all of you because I did not hear one cell phone ring during this meeting. And I was supposed to... I was supposed to remind you all to turn them off, and I forgot to remind you, and I guess most of you did it anyway, and I'm very grateful for that. We do have a few minutes left, and there are a couple of things I wanted to tell you. I want to thank a friend of mine. When I got here this morning, I was very nervous because somebody told me that sometimes some of the speakers don't show up. And they said you can choose a speaker and to replace any speaker that doesn't show up. And so a good friend of mine walked into the meeting with us, and I asked him if he would be willing to fill in. And I want to thank Moose because he was willing to be there for us, even though I didn't have to call on him. I'm very grateful that I know I could probably have asked any person in this room and they would have been willing to fill in at this podium at no notice because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We share with one another. We share our experience, our strength, and our hope, and sometimes our hopelessness. And, you know, it doesn't really matter much what we share, because whatever we share, it's coming from the heart. You know, they told me when I share in Alcoholics Anonymous, all I need to do is remember that it's not about me. You know, it's not about me. It's about carrying the message. It's not about gratifying my ego. It's about letting the new person know that there's hope in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope some of us do get to talk to Mark's new friend, Jerry, because I think that's an important thing for us to share. We're getting a lot of people who come to our rooms who are not necessarily alcoholics, and that's amazing. When I came into this fellowship 46 years ago, we could not imagine anybody coming here who was not an alcoholic. You know, it was like, why would they want to? We didn't understand that we had something that would be attractive to many people. And I am very grateful for the various fellowships that have sprung up as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that we have some place now that we can send people and refer people who have problems other than alcohol. If they're alcoholics, it doesn't matter what other problems they got, they're welcome here. Thank God. If I only had to be a pure alcoholic, I could not be standing here this morning. I am so glad. You know, there's that thing in the 12 and 12 where they list seven different things that they tried to keep people out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And if you're not familiar with it, go read that passage. It's really interesting. I figured out one time that I qualified for 6 out of 7. And I never tell people which one I didn't. Let them guess. Anyway, I am very grateful to have had the opportunity this morning to chair this meeting and to share with all of you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have such gratitude for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am grateful that it was here when I needed it, and I'm grateful that it's still here because I have children in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to AA, I didn't have any children, and I was very grateful for that because I knew that I would not have been capable of caring for them. I wasn't capable of caring for myself. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know how I did it. I never wanted to have children, and I somehow wound up with 6. I'm not a very disciplined person, obviously. but I wound up with 6 children, and out of those 6 children, 5 of them are alcoholics and have come to this program after having to experience their own bottoms of alcoholism. And I have one daughter who is not an alcoholic. She's an Al-Anon member. I don't understand why she needs that. Just because both of her parents and all of her siblings are alcoholic, you know. I am so grateful for this program and for the program of Al-Anon. And if there are any Al-Anon members here this morning, thank you. Thank you for being there for us. Thank you for being supportive of your alcoholic family member. And thank you for having your own program. It's probably the model for a lot of those other programs that we send people to, and I'm very grateful for that. I know that we are going to close down a little early, but they told me that leaders lead and speakers speak, and I have not followed that very well this morning because I've talked a lot, but I just wanted to share with you one more thing. You know, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for 46 years, and I have done a lot of things. I've been very privileged to carry the message in a lot of places and share in a lot of meetings and conferences. And I was able to serve Alcoholics Anonymous as a delegate to the General Service Conference. And I've been able to chair meetings at 2 of our international conventions. And, you know, out of all of those things that I have done in Alcoholics Anonymous and all of the things that I've been able to accomplish in my own personal life as a result of my sobriety, there is absolutely nothing that is more important to me today, nothing that is more important to Alcoholics Anonymous than that new person that's walking through the door today. And I would be willing to bet that there will be somebody who will walk into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of this convention, as a result of meeting someone of us on the street, are seeing our signs, are hearing about our convention through the media. And as those new people come in, our responsibility is to be there and to let it begin with us. You know, let it begin with us as we reach out to that new member coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. Let each one of them have the same chance for sobriety, the same chance for a sober life that we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank each of you for being here and letting it begin with you as those new members come into your groups and run into you in the street. I hope each of us attending this convention will be an example that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. And, you know, they say be the best copy of a big book anybody ever sees. And I hope each of us will do that as we visit San Antonio, and that the people of San Antonio will recognize that Alcoholics Anonymous is something worthwhile to have in their community. I did want to do one other thing, and I've hesitated about it, but I've decided to do it, and I hope that Don doesn't mind. I'm hoping that Don will understand, but I'm going to ask him to erase the photograph that he took of this group, and I'm going to do that because I know that there are at least four people sitting in the first two rows here that I know and who would not give permission for their photograph to be taken in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that it's important for us to set the example for the other members here. There will be an anonymity-protected photograph of tonight's meeting, and I hope everyone will take advantage of taking that photograph back to their groups. And please, as you take photographs during the convention, be sure that you have the permission of the people who will be in those photographs. And thank you very much for attending this meeting and allowing me to share with you. Thank you. And thanks to all our speakers.